meeting of the House Transportation Committee at 1:12 on Tuesday, March 8th. And with us today are Representative Klayman, Representative Ortiz, Representative Foster, and myself, Representative Hughes. Representative Nagyak is chairing resources, so won't be here today. I'd like to remind people to turn off their cell phones or silence them. And I also want to thank and recognize Summers Cole, our House Records Secretary, and Cody Grusendorf, our LIO moderator, for being with us today. Today we're going to hear HB 319, Snowmobile Registration Fees. And this will be the first time we'll hear this along with the invited testimony, and we'll open public testimony. And so I'd like to invite Representative Tilton, your staff, to come on up and put yourselves on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Hughes and Foster, and members of the committee for hearing HB 319 today. I am Representative Kathy Tilton. I represent House District 12, which includes parts of Chidiac and the Mat-Su. It's easier than saying all the different areas. With me today is my staff, Christopher Clark. This measure would increase the snowmobile fee to, it's a two-year snowmobile fee, and it would increase the fee from $10 to $20 and also allow for a six-year fee at $50, so getting a bit of a discount there. At this time in our budget, it is really refreshing that this this bill came to the legislature from some of the user groups themselves. They see it as a way to help improve developing and maintaining snowmobile trails and promoting snowmobile safety. Current fees in Alaska generate up to $250,000 a year for the Snowmobile Trail Development Program, which is managed by the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation and Snowtrack. User groups want to be able to keep these monies available and are willing to do their part to ensure the continuation of the program. According to a recent legislative report, which I think you may have in your packets, did we include those?
We didn't do that.
Oh, I'm sorry, we didn't include those, but we can get you a copy. There are 22 states that have snowmobile registration fees, and of these, Alaska and Oregon are the lowest fees out of the 22 states. So in my life outside the legislature, I was honored to be involved in the snowmobile industry as a part of a snowmobile group. For 8 years, I helped to run that, and I'm a snowmobile enthusiast to this day, still riding whenever I can. So, as with all industries, and there are different types of user groups, and there's going to be differences of opinion, because within any user group where there's different user groups, there's going to be differences of how the usage of the machine, and even within riders, there's different types of riding and ways of riding, but that's... And then, believe it or not, there's actually different sleds that you need for different things. So, and you start to find that out when you have a son that's involved in racing. So, anyway, that being said, the bill has the support of Kevin Height, who is in the president of the Alaska State Snowmobile Association, and I think he's online today, as well as Dan Mayfield, who is of Snowtrack, who I believe brought this idea forward, and one of this year's Iron Dog champions, Tyler Acklestad. Also on the line, we have Ben Ellis, who is the director of Parks and Outdoor Rec, who can talk to you about how the fund has been used, as well as Amy Erickson, who is the director of the Division of Motor Vehicles, to explain the fiscal note and how the agency collects the fees. So with that, there's a good introduction and can move forward.
And I'd like to recognize for the record that Representative Stutz has joined us. Did you have a question, Representative Foster?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question might be for Amy Erickson. I think she's online, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Just curious, so it's been a while since I've purchased a snow machine, and I don't recall paying a fee. Is that automatically included in the purchase of the snow machine when you buy it? And that was my understanding, is that it was. I see the yes shaking of heads. But then the other thing that I didn't realize is that it's a two-year snowmobile registration. So that means you have to renew that every 2 years and pay the fee. That's currently how that works under the $10 registration fee, is that right?
Representative Foster, through yourself. Yes, that is, right now it is in statute that it is a 2-year fee, and then you do renew that fee, and the fee is, my understanding, generally charged at the point of sale, generally through dealership.
Okay. So the dealer charges the fee up front, and then every 2 years, do snowmobile owners receive something in the mail that says you need to pay this fee?
It'd be like, Representative Foster, it would be like you would receive on your registration for a vehicle, you would receive a notification.
Okay. Follow up?
Mm-hmm.
So you said you would receive that, I assume, under the bill proposal. Is that currently how it works? Like, I know folks who own snow machines, and I just don't ever recall hearing people. I don't know if it's maybe they're just throwing it in the trash and they're not paying it. Is that how? So.
Representative Foster, and Amy can correct me if I'm wrong, but yes, that is how it currently works. You do receive a mailing like you do a registration for a trailer or a trailer that you may pull, a vehicle registration. Yes, you do receive
okay.
a notification.
Thank you.
And just for the record, when you said that's how it happens, that's correct. I don't think you meant the throwing in the trash part, right?
Oh, that was me. Yes, thank you. That was me.
I'm sure at least she doesn't know anyone who will touch it.
Now, we have invited testimony. Are there any other questions for the bill's sponsor before we go to the invited testimony? Okay, with that, and you did list the names. Is there a particular person you thought would be best to go first? I have an order here, and as a reminder, I believe Ben Ellis with Division of Parks and Outdoor Rec is online, but he wasn't actually going to be testifying. Is that correct? He's for questions, and Amy was for questions. Amy Erickson with DMV. Correct?
Yes.
So we can take that Amy can respond to the most recent question, and then the other ones are to testify, is that correct? Did you have a particular order for those that you thought might be best? Or?
No. Whatever places the chair.
Well, Amy, if you are online, if you would like to maybe comment on the discussion that Representative Foster brought up about how it works with the registration, and I'd be curious if you could tell us the response rate, are those mailed back in, what percentage, et cetera?
Certainly, I actually don't know the number of the percentage that gets returned, but DMV does send notices for renewals of snow machines, and we have learned that based on our statistics, about 25,000 of the 39,000 snow machines and ATVs registered are a 2-year registration. Then you skip to the 4 years, and it's about 7,500 that are a 4-year registration, and it drops down to 6,500 who opt for a 6-year registration.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Foster, did you have a follow-up question for Ms. Erickson?
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Amy, so do those renewals go out to everybody in rural Alaska? And I guess again, the reason I'm asking is I own a snow machine. I don't ever remember seeing one of those before.
Through the Chair, Representative Foster, it is required that snow machine owners do register their snow machines.
Follow-up? But you say that those are mailed out to folks. I guess a reminder or something gets sent out. Like I mean, this is something that I didn't know about, and I think most folks in rural Alaska probably aren't aware of. And like I say, I've never seen anything in the mail before.
Through the Chair, Representative Foster, if your snow machine isn't currently registered to you, DMV wouldn't have a way to send you a renewal notice.
Ms. Erickson, so when somebody just sells their snow machine, this $10 probably isn't being collected, and that's probably one of the things, but distributors, retail, would be including the $10 fee, and you would then get a record of it, is that correct?
Chair Hughes, that's correct. The dealerships would register the snow machine, and then DMV would know about it. But if there's a personal sale, DMV wouldn't necessarily be notified about it because there's no certificate of title. It's just a registration and a bill of sale.
Madam Chair.
Representative Foster.
Thank you. So I guess I'm kind of putting myself out there, but I bought my snow machine brand new, never sold it, always been in my name, and I think it was 2003 that I bought it, so by now I probably should have received at least 6 or 7 notices in the mail, because every 2 years sounds like something should be going up, but I've just never received anything. Not to keep going on this issue, but I guess I'm just trying to figure out the structure of how this works and how it could affect rural Alaskans. So, thank you.
Ms. Erickson, how many years has this been, was 2003 before it was instituted? In fact, I used to have, for my vehicle, my main mode of transportation was a snow machine when I lived in Fort Yukon. I didn't have a vehicle. And, of course, that was way back. But this is more recent, isn't it, Ms. Erickson? We know when.
Chair Hughes, in looking at my statute book, it looks like this started in 1998.
All right. I guess Representative Foster's going to have to pay up. Go ahead, Christopher.
Christopher Clark, to Representative Tilton. In your packet is some statistics provided by the Division of Motor Vehicles on breaking down all the communities, how many snowmobile registrations there are. And you will notice on there that in Nome there's only 45, so you may not be alone in that regard.
And for the record, my days in Fort Yukon were before 1998, just so you know that I don't need to pay up. Representative Foster.
And I suspect that if there are 45 currently out there, just in the past year alone, I'm sure that more than 45 snow machines have been sold from Nome, because they don't just go to Nome, but they get sold, sent out to the villages. But what would happen is one of the 2 or 3 dealerships in Nome, when they make the sale, they would automatically register that $10 is included in the sales price, and I'm sure all the paperwork gets taken care of by the dealer. So you know, if anything, I could just see that being for this year, but then what about all the other 2,000 snow machines in the region or whatnot. So, and then the other thing that I wanted to mention here is, or ask about, was trail maintenance. It sounds like the funds, the $250,000 that would be, I guess, either generated or is currently within the program that is used for trail maintenance. Does any of that money go towards rural Alaska? It sounds, just in my preliminary questioning, it sounded like those were kind of trails that were more in South Central or some of the urban areas. Is that right?
Representative Foster, if we could have Ben Ellis could give us a distribution of the funds, if we could bring him online to answer that, that'd be great.
Thanks.
Ben, are you here?
Yes, this is Ben Ellis, Director of the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation. Madam Chairman, can you hear me?
We can. Go ahead, Ben. Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. The majority of snow track funds, which come from the registration fee, the DMV transfers the money over to Parks and Outdoor Recreation. Primarily, Representative Foster's right, primarily go to the urban areas for grooming. Although we have in the past, in fact for the last 3 years, encouraged grant recipients from the non-road system to apply for safety and education grants. For an example, markers or tripods that would mark trails, say, between villages. 3 years ago, we did receive one request that we granted that was $15,000, but then the city did not go ahead and execute the program. This is a reimbursable type of grant. A city or community or club gets the grant. They go through the procedures they've set out in the grant to receive the money. They send the receipts, and then we reimburse. That grant was not executed, and so for the next 2 years, we focused on trying to get grants to, again, for signage, education, emergency response type of funding to rural Alaska. Unfortunately, we didn't have any applicants, and so last year, after the money sitting idle for actually 3 years, we rolled that back into the grooming pool. This is a statewide program. It was designed as a statewide program. We encourage, especially safety and education grants from areas outside the urban areas, and just unfortunately, we haven't been receiving any.
Thank you.
Follow-up, Representative Foster.
And thank you. That answer is appreciated. My initial inclination was that I had supported the increase from $10 to $20 for the folks who would be benefiting from the grooming of trails and so forth. And so initially, and maybe I may still explore this more, but initially I was inclined to say that, you know, maybe if there's a way we could get some kind of a rural exemption if none of those funds were going out to support, you know, anything in rural Alaska. But I think you've hit on something that's kind of really piqued my interest, and that is, you know, I think the village trail marking and emergency response and some of those, I think those are, you know, certainly very important to, you know, people who use snow machines out in rural Alaska. And so it's just a matter of making sure that the word is out there so that they understand that they are eligible for these funds. So so I'll think about that a bit more, but that's something that I didn't know about. So thank you.
I have another question for you, Mr. Ellis, and I don't know if you're the right person to ask this, and we may not even have anyone who can answer this question, but particularly there have been some recent very sad stories about avalanche disasters, and folks are on snow machines when they're occurring often. Is there anything that's collected for search and rescue in regard to snow machines?
No. Madam Chairman, through the snow grant program, snow machine program that the division administers, there is not.
Okay, thank you.
We do provide our ranger services for search and rescue in Hatcher Pass or in wherever we have our rangers, which are all qualified and obviously riding snow machines and CPR, and they've received advanced search and rescue techniques, but as far as funding, there is not.
So at this time, there's no user fee that goes towards search and rescue. Do you happen to know what is being spent on user search and rescue in regard to snow machine users across the state?
Madam Chairman, I do not.
Would you know where we could get that information?
I will look into. I would assume that we would need to talk to the Department of Public Safety, mm-hmm. And see if they track that. I know that we and the division here do not, but I will look into it and get back to you and the committee.
Okay, thank you very much. I have another question for the sponsor. Representative Clayman, go ahead.
A couple of questions. I'm not sure whether you're the right one to answer the question or whether it's for the sponsor. All these funds that would get collected actually go into the general fund, and then there's an effort. There is some grant programs that go on and other programs that allocate funds from the general fund for different programs, including trails and apparently not including search and rescue, but could be done for that. But we're still ultimately looking at a revenue increase, and there's no promise if we pass this bill that the increased revenue will necessarily go to the snow machine program. There's a hope that we'll think about that when we appropriate money, but there's no guarantee or requirement to do so. Am I correct about that? Or
Through the chair, Representative Clayton, you're correct. This bill focuses on increasing snow machine registration fees. There is no nexus between currently or if this bill passes increased fees going to a snow grant program, snow track program. The money would go into, is collected by DMV, would go into, be slated for the general fund. At the present time, there needs to be either a request for my division to have receipt authority from either in the governor's budget or within the legislature to be able to receive a certain amount of money. Currently, in this year's budget, I can receive up to $250,000 of snow machine registration fees. I will say that we have never received that amount. I think the closest has been 220 some odd thousand 1 year and 212,000 another year. Usually it's right around the $200,000 mark, or a little high, somewhere in there. But even if this would go forward, the authority would still be whatever the governor's budget or was put in by the legislature. And it doesn't necessarily, if you double this fee, mean that there's going to be twice as much money within the snow machine program.
And I'll follow up that with a question. So, assuming you've been gathering about 200,000, you double it. Let's say you get 400,000. Right now, receipt authority is only for 250. Am I hearing you correctly, Mr. Ellis?
Madam Chairman, that's correct. And it would again either be, as Representative Clayton indicated, it would be the legislature's, unless it's written into the statute, it would be the legislature's decision each year as to whether or not to support whatever that number is that would come from the governor's budget. And if the governor's budget didn't have it in there, if it did not have it in there last year, it was added in by the legislature last year, and that $250,000 receipt authority was put in there. So ultimately, the way it works now is that the legislature each year would have the ability to put that number in. It could be $250,000, it could be $500,000, it could be whatever you decided.
Okay, Representative Kramer?
So if you could just clarify a little bit for me, and this is part of being a newer legislator. When you start talking about receipt authority, that sounds like it becomes a straight pass-through, that if they collect $200,000 in fees, then it goes straight into this fund, which sounds like we're really not appropriating. We're basically saying you get the earmarked fees goes to you. And so I'm just trying to get a little clarity. Are we essentially saying we're going to track how much money comes in, and if up to this amount, we'll let it go there, although we're still appropriating it for that purpose, or am I just mincing words?
Through the chair, Representative Clayman, Amy would have to make sure I'm accurate on this, but it's my understanding that our receipt, that the DMV has never, at least in the last 5 years that I've been here, have ever received more money in snow machine registration fees than the amount that we have receipt authority to receive. So, in that case, it is it goes into the general fund. There cannot be any dedicated funds, but the action of receipt authority allows that money each year to be transferred. It comes into my budget, and it's in my capital budget that is then pigeonholed, if you would, for the snow track program.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, this is Christopher Clark, A2, Representative Tilden, to answer Representative Clayman's question. Now, yes, everything is subject to appropriation, and the statutes provide authorization, but it's always up to the legislature to appropriate. And in the fiscal note that Amy Erickson and her workers prepared, you see on page 2, she raises the very point that Ellis just mentioned, which is if they ever have an excess of $250,000, an excess of current receipt authority, it goes into the general fund.
Okay, thank you. And did you have something, Representative Tilden, to ask? I have another question. You mentioned in your opening remark, Representative Tilden, that that we along with Oregon, have the lowest fees. Do you have the range of what other states cover, and does it also go towards trails, or is it used for search and rescue or other things?
Oh, Representative Hughes, I'm going to defer to Christopher Clark. He has the report here with him.
Thank you, Representative, Madam Chair, Representative Hughes. We'll make sure this is available to your staff, and they've done a great job, by the way. Thank you to your staff for posting everything we've given them online. And what we ask Legislative Research Services to do is just to outline how many other states actually have snowmobile fees, and we find out there's an astonishing 22 states and five, I believe, Canadian provinces. And what this does, however, it doesn't break down whether it's dedicated to snowmobile maintenance. It actually just gives you a section of showing how much each state charges. And for example, Alaska and Oregon are tied at the lowest for $10 for every 2 years. New York stands at the highest at $100, and we'll happily make this available.
I'm sorry, Madam, which page is he looking at?
Is it? Oh,
we have,
it,
it,
it's,
on your
it's
packet,
not
but
in
you
our
will
packet
give it
yet.
To you. Yeah, I'll be sure you guys get it.
Okay.
All right, are there any other questions for the bill's sponsor, Representative Foster?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for Ben. So it sounds like this is a statewide program, and so rural communities would be eligible to apply for some of the funds. And certainly I can do my part in terms of getting the word out with regard to, you know, just whether it's my newsletter or whatnot. In the past, has there been, I guess, any efforts to get the word out to let communities know that there may be funds available?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, especially in the last 2 years, we have our grants and Summit Sheen, the coordinator, trails coordinator, has contacted and talked to people in, I believe, in Buckland and Kotzebue and Bethel, I believe in other areas, encouraging organizations or communities to apply for the grants, and there has been some interest, but there has been no applications.
Okay.
But we would love to work with your office to get this, to get the word out. Because it, I think it could be a pivotal point to helping save lives if we could start providing more trail markings and safety education and training and areas that use snow machine routes as highways.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. Ian, and I certainly appreciate that and the efforts that you've made. And I'm excited. I think that even if, you know, I think you had mentioned earlier it was like $15,000 for a tripod trail marking project. And even if we, you know, just did, you know, one village or one region a year at that low amount, I think that would, you know, be worth it. Because like you say, in my region, we've had a lot of, you know, we've had some fatalities with folks who, frankly, they're going between villages and they get caught in a storm and bad things happen. And so you know, I think I'm pretty excited about the prospect. And I don't know, in terms of reporting on how much gets dispersed into rail each year, I don't know if you're already doing that. I'm just toying with the idea in my head of, you know, maybe just an amendment that says each year just an email will be sent out just saying, you know, $50,000 was given to this community, $50,000 was given to this, you know, trail, $15,000 was given to this village, and so forth. Or are you already reporting that on how it's dispersed?
Good Chair, Representative Foster, yes, both on our web page dealing with snow machines and snow track provides the breakdown of the area that received the money, how much money they received, if it's grooming, if it was towards, you know, safety and education, signs, etc. We also do a press release that's it's put out each year. The process is that the snow track advisory board takes looks at the a grant request. They have a thorough discussion and vetting of the request. Then they make the recommendation. It comes to the director's office. And I would say 9 times out of 10, I accept the recommendations. The only example that I can think of in the recent history was when we didn't get anybody to apply for the $15,000 safety program that would be in rural Alaska, that instead of putting that into grooming, I put it out on the street again, hoping that we'd get some interest, and we would take that approach again in the future. It's important that we get the message out, and we'll do everything we can to help get it out.
Follow-up, Representative Foster.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Representative Klayman.
Going back to the, I think, Chris, you were talking about the fees in other states, and Alaska's low and Oregon is low. Can you give me a rough idea? What are some of the higher fees in a couple of the states, and what is kind of an average? I know we can figure that out ourselves when we get the information, but I'd be curious to know.
Madam Chair, Representative Klayman, some of the examples given are, say, I'm going to go for the high ones. I'm almost all, because they all are high. Maine charges a $46 annual fee. New York, get back to New York, is the high one that stands out, is they charge a $100 annual resident and non-resident fee, and yet they also charge $45 for someone who is part of the New York State Snowmobile Association, so something maybe Dan Mayfield wants to think about with his organization, or rather Kevin Height may want to think about with their organizations. But Minnesota charges $78.50 for 3 years for trail use. Montana, $60.50 for a one-time fee, and then they break it down by a rental. Nebraska has a $200 manufacturer registration. I don't know if that's, we'd have anything comparable here like that. Newfoundland, $23 annual fee. I don't know if that's Canadian dollars, but
it was up and down.
Yeah. Well, those are just some of these now. Quebec, $92.90, and Washington State has a $50 annual fee for snowmobiles that are less than 30 years old, and a $12 annual fee for snowmobiles that are 3 years old and older. So I'll be sure that this gets to the committee members and to your staff so they can post it on the legislature's website so that members of the public can also see this as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I have a question, and it might be for Ben, or unless the sponsor can answer it, and it's kind of follow-up to the line of questioning Representative Foster has brought up. As far as the rural interest and hopefully promotion that some of these funds will go out there, but the 9-member Snowmobile Trails Advisory Council, are those appointed by the governor, or and are there rural representatives on that council?
Madam Chairman, Ben Ellis with the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation. That 9-member advisory board is appointed by the director. We have only two of our advisory boards in state parks is appointed by the governor. That would be within the governor's boards and commissions. We have one that is appointed by the commissioner, and the other 17 advisory boards that parks has is appointed by the director. We did have a representative. I believe that representative was from the Nome area, I believe. I could be corrected wrong on that. But definitely from rural Alaska. Unfortunately, they resigned. And as a present time, we do not have a member that would be from rural Alaska. Although, again, we're very hopeful and we would encourage those that want to work on the program that we've been talking about, that we can entice some interest.
And as follow-up to that, there are no regulatory direction as far as the makeup of that council. It's just up to the director, whoever he wants to pick. He could pick 9 people from Anchorage if he wanted. Is there anything that requires rural representation?
The Soundtrack Board has created their sort of bylaws or their operating procedures, which talks about the diversity on the board. But again, there's nothing set through either the governor's office or statute concerning the board, and it was set up in 1998 when the registration was created and set up by then the director, Jim Stratton, to again provide a voice for snow machine users to to weigh in on where the registration fees will go, but it is it's more of an ad hoc type of approach rather than anything in statute.
Okay, thank you for that. Are there any other questions before we go to invited testimony? And we'll give opportunity again. And so we will start with online Dan Mayfield, who's the chair of the San Juan Rail Trails Advisory Council. Dan, are you there?
I am, thank you.
If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, please.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, Transportation Committee members. My name is Dan Mayfield. I'm the chair of the Snowmobile Trails Advisory Council, also known as SnowTrack. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill number 319 to increase snow machine registration fees. This is a very simple bill, but it's one that could have a great impact on the sustainability of trail safety, education, trail access, development, grooming, signage, and really the economy of communities that depend on winter recreational visitations from snow machine and other trail users. These goals are the subject of our work on the Snow Machine Trails Advisory Council. The SnowTrack program is the only revenue-neutral, self-funded, and user-based program in the state of Alaska, with all funding being derived from the registration of snow machine. Unfortunately, available funding has fallen far short of needs to sustain our goals. Currently, we're in survival mode, with only bare minimum grants going to grooming, which forces us to put aside other goals and put them on the back burner in hopes that better funding opportunities may present themselves in the future. Over the past 3 years, funding requests have ranged from a high of $373,551 to a low of $360,831. Available funding has ranged from $204,000 to $278,000. This has not been nearly enough to meet the demand. House Bill number 319 will restore the sustainability of the SnowTrack program and allow us to meet the demands of trail users with little or no cost to the state of Alaska. What better investment can you make in tough financial times than to let users adequately fund their own program? With any piece of legislation, there'll be opposition. We all know that. But with giving due consideration to House Bill number 319, I hope that you'll consider that over 85% of all users come from communities that either directly benefit from or have the potential to benefit from the funding and services that the passage of this bill would provide. It's not that the other 15% aren't important, they very well are. And, of course, I've heard the discussion about rural Alaska, and I take that to heart. We'll continue to make strong overtures to include those groups in all the outreach that we're able to accomplish, and make them aware of funding in their area. And I'm very, very sensitive to that. You know, this is a statewide program, and it's certainly something that we want to continue on a statewide basis. I would also ask that you consider increased receipt authority when you move this bill forward. That also is critical to meeting our funding demands. I want to make sure that I make the point that the SnowTrack Board is an inclusive group, and we celebrate the successes of all snow machine advocates everywhere. And so, of course, rural Alaska is an area that's very important to us. One of our original plans was to have a statewide trail system. And that's the vision that we embrace. Ultimately, I think that will come to fruition, but it will certainly take us some time to build that. In conclusion, it's been my honor to provide testimony with you, and I want to thank you for your service, as well as I want to encourage you to fully support House Bill number 319. I'm available for questions if you have them. I suppose I should in the spirit of full disclosure, I do want to make you aware that I am president of Big Lake Trails, which is a 501c3 trail maintenance organization, as well as the president of the Big Lake Chamber of Commerce, and I'm also an assembly member from the Mattoo Valley. However, I am giving testimony today only in the capacity as chair of SnowTrek. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan, very much for your testimony. Do we have a question for Mr. Mayfield? Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate your words, especially in regards to rural there. And I'm inclined to, probably need to hear more debate on this, but I'm inclined to agree with you in terms of increasing the receipt authority. And going back to the question that Kirchherr Hughes had regarding the representation, it sounds like somebody may have been from Nome a few years ago. I guess is there anybody on the board who might be on there that's considered even semi-rural, for example, not necessarily from Anchorage or Mattsu, but even just outside of Mattsu, whether it's like Chicoloo or Glen Allen or anything like that? Or I guess are there folks on there who are somewhat rural, I guess?
We do have representation from the Fairbanks area, obviously from Anchorage, from the Mattsu Valley, from Juneau, from the Homer, Seward, Kenai area, but as Director Ellis had indicated, we don't presently have a representative from Western Alaska, but that certainly is not due to lack of trying.
Thank you, Dan, and I think that's part of my job down here too is if we can help out in any way, then I certainly want to do that. And so maybe we'll get in contact with you and just find out, I guess, when the next opportunities are for us to see if anybody's interested. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
I would certainly invite that. Thank you.
And any other questions for Mr. Mayfield? Thank you very much, Dan. Appreciate your service to the community and to the Mattsu Borough. Kevin Height, next president of Alaska State Snowmobile Association. Kevin, are you there? And state your name and proceed with the your presentation.
I am here. My name is Kevin Height, H-I-T-E. I'm president of the Alaska State Snowmobile Association. And I want to start off with Madam Chair and then the Transportation Committee. Thanks for the opportunity to address this issue. We appreciate the work that you guys have done and appreciate this bill having an opportunity to go forward given our budgetary conflicts and everything that you guys are weighted down with here in this last session. I was fortunate enough to be a part of the group that actually actually Governor Noel signed it into being back in late 1997 and watched the progress of SnowTrek go from that early steps that we had into what we're doing now. There's a lot of things that are moving parts in this program. Both Dan and Director Ellis have both been pretty modest with it. This program was designed and started off with a focus on safety and infrastructure in the state. A lot of work has gone into it with the different groups that have been part of the SnowTrek board. We've had several representatives from Kotzebue on. We've had different people from Western Alaska to Representative Foster's concern about that. And they were terrific contributors to the program all through the progress for it. What we've seen in the last few years, especially in the last 10 years, is with the $5 a year funding mechanism that we have in it, as everybody is well aware, inflation is eating that all to pieces. And is being challenged like DNR is with trying to fund all of the different requests that we had to come in, that program has gotten away from some of the original intent, which was, like I said, heavily weighted towards safety. When we talk about avalanche, we talk about backcountry travel, and we talk about travel between the villages. And part of that design has gone into SnowTrek and has evolved really into more of a grooming program, which is, once again, not the original intent, but it's one of the programs that does probably more good for snow machiners around the state than anything else that's ever been there. Snow machiners are pretty proud that it's a self-funded program. There is an issue with communication, and Representative Foster, we don't do a very good job of telling folks outside of maybe the dealer area that we're worth, that we work with, exactly where this money goes and why we should be, you know, working toward getting it for that. With the $200,000 to $250,000 that comes into the program for DNR, it's gotten much more difficult to spread that money around in a meaningful way. Advocation for the raise in fees has been a long time coming, and there's certainly been some fits and stops and starts with it. We view the State Snowmobile Association, our 1,600 members, view this as a first step toward going back to the original intent of the SnowTrack program, which would be to provide a statewide infrastructure for a trail system. If we look at just the safety programs, which is one of the things that the Fairbanks and the Interior folks are the strongest advocates of in our programs, there's not enough money in it at presently to do a good job with that. When we looked at several programs and several options for doing it, we came up with the estimate that it would be about $300,000 to $320,000 a year to do justice to a good statewide safety program in Alaska. Raising our fees and raising the authority for the director to also receive those monies, once again, we feel is a good first step toward that. The ASSA is very focused on getting the program up and running and revitalizing it with some new funding. Right now, they're doing a terrific job with not very much money. It's being spread out pretty thin. Some areas are not getting the money that should be out through there. You know, once again, to the point of some of the comments so far, and putting more money in the system is going to be imperative to doing that. So we do support the fee increase as well as the increased authority for Director Ellis to go forward with this. A lot of work goes into these programs. Most of the groomers around the state are stretched thin. They're doing a lot of this on their own money, their own time. And realistically, when we go to look at recommendations for changing that program, we run into that roadblock. You guys are well aware of it, that funding is everything that we know is an issue now in the state. You just factor in everything that goes to it, and changes are needed to the program. And in order to institute some meaningful changes, the fee increase is an absolute necessity. We've heard a lot of discussion about other states, and how Christopher has done a terrific amount of work on that. Most of the other states that he mentioned, it was specifically New York and the New England states, not only do they have statewide fees for going into it that range in the $100 to $80, each one of their counties many times has a trail program sticker that you've got to purchase as well. As they go forward, we have contacts back there. There are some places in New York, some places in Wisconsin, some of the big snowbelt states where you can, just by riding around the interconnected trail system, to put about $250 to $450 into registrations for a year. Those funds are basically come right from the user groups, DNR, state parks. Those guys are all working together collectively to work on statewide programs. And as we move forward, those are models that we intend to, quite honestly, steal from. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. They do a real nice job at it. We look at funding mechanisms for those states, and some of the budgets for the snowmobile states, Wisconsin in particular, are in the $2 to $3 million. So we've got work to do not only on our infrastructure, but on ways that we fund the infrastructure without, once again, putting in any kind of weight on the state now. The state's got enough problems with the low oil prices and everything we do. And once again, snow machiners have always stepped forward. The DNR, DMV relationships that we've had have always been very good. There's never been an instance where DMV collected more money than they put back into the program, so that's any thought process that indicates that is absolutely not true. We've actually probably had more money funded to us than we put in it over the long run. Once again, a lot of changes. Just basically taking away a 16-ounce latte per year and putting it back into our program seems a small first step, but I think it's an imperative first step.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Height from members? Well, thank you very much for being here. Appreciate your testimony. And our last invited testimony is an Iron Dog champion. Tyler Acklestead is online. Tyler, can you hear me? Can you introduce yourself and your affiliation and provide your testimony, please?
Oh, he's not.
And apparently he is not available.
I had to go back
to work. Oh, okay. All right. So we got excited to hear from Tyler, and I guess maybe we'll hear from him at a future time, as the intention is to hold this bill. And with that, then, we will close the invited testimony and open public testimony. And we have online for public testimony James Squires. Can you hear me, James? Are you... James, can you hear me? If you could state your name for the record, Mr. Squires, and your affiliation. So apparently we're having technical difficulties. So,
can you hear me?
Oh, now we can. Yes, please. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is James Squires. I'm an Article 1, Section 2 Alaskan. I'm also from rural Deltana. There's a couple things, I oppose this bill, HB 319. There's a couple things in the sponsor statement I'd like to address first. One says the measure has support from snow machine users. Well, it doesn't have support from me. I'm a snow machine user. It doesn't have support from other snow machine users that I know out in this area. It also says enjoys support from users who are willing to pay more for a service that they need and they enjoy. But that doesn't include people who are not willing to pay more. Looking at the merits of this bill, let's start with the fact that you're looking for a 100% increase on the two-year fee. You're raising revenue. This revenue increase is taking place in a time when we should be spending our time looking at cutting more before considering these things. You folks have just come out of the finance subcommittee process. All of you are probably a lot more analysts than you thought you would be taking this job, looking for different types of cuts that are taking place in the budgeting process. Also, you've had to take a hard look at the size and scope of government. Many of you belong to a political party that has a platform plank that calls for a limited size and scope in government. Now, this issue on these snow machine fees has now been brought before you and should be looked at in its totality. Now that the issue's been brought before you, you should take a look at the whole enchilada. Many of us Alaskans live remote. Half of the state is unorganized. The sponsor and the co-sponsor come from the more organized parts of the state, the more urbanized parts of the state. I believe they're both from organized boroughs. Now, I'm probably the only one here who's actually run my snow machine today. I've run my snow machine twice today, once to bring in seasoned wood to replenish the cabin, and another time to bring in green wood to split and stack, which is actually going to get burned 2 years from now. So out where I live, snow machines are used as a tool. Mm-hmm. There's no groomed trails out here. We cut our own trails out here, and then if we want to groom them for cross-country skiing, we get a piece of chain-link fence with a board across it and a weight on it, and we drag out our trails, and they're just the most gorgeous trails you can imagine for cross-country skiing, but we do it on our own. There's nobody that I know around here that's got any tags or registration on their snow machine. So I'm sympathetic to part of Representative Foster's testimony when he said, wait a second, I've never seen anything in the mail, because this is something that's by and large totally ignored in rural Alaska. It's actually, most people probably don't even know that there's any tax due. Other people are not complying because of the kind of a nullification that takes place. Because you heard testimony where all the money is being spent in urbanized areas, not in rural areas. They talk like they want to spend some of this money in rural areas. But I mean, myself, my nearest neighbor is 6 miles away in either direction. There's no trails that are ever going to get used. I mean, that are going to get groomed with any type of state funding. But anyway, nobody around here that I know even has tags. When you buy a snow machine, you lay down the cash, and you got yourself another tool, like a chainsaw or a splitter. We got five troopers out here, but thousands of square miles. Five troopers in the Delta area. And the area is so large, you know, that there's no type of enforcement. Are you advocating for increasing enforcement?
Okay. It appears that the call got dropped, and I don't know if Mr. Squires can hear me, but if not, we'll thank you for what you were able to state so far, and we'll move on to Scott Lapine, or Lapine, if you could identify yourself and provide your testimony, Scott.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is, members of the committee, my name is Scott Lapine. I'm a resident of the Matsu Borough. I grew up in Juneau. I'm currently on the board of the longest standing multimodal trails organization in the Matsu Borough. We've been in existence for about 27 years. I served on the state trails board twice. First in 1999 when appointments were made by the governor, and then later under Director Ellis. I support pay to play, and that principle is that those of us that enjoy outdoor recreation should contribute to the maintenance of that infrastructure, and those fees that we pay should be returned to the user community. So with this increase, we do need the commitment from the legislature to, if it's the term is receipt authority or appropriation, that we increase the amount returned for SnowTrack accordingly. I will say and echo the statements by Kevin and by Chris that Alaska and the development of winter recreation is generations behind the lower 48. During my 20 plus years working on trails, I've had significant opportunities to meet and discuss and study other states and their systems and their modes of funding. And we are, by and large, a generation or more behind in the development. I understand the rural concern. Even back in the 90s, serving on what was called the track board at the time, we had difficulties getting the rural communities to participate and applying for grant monies. I believe it's harder today because of the hurdles that are in place that an organization has to be an incorporated nonprofit or a government body or a native corporation in order to apply for a grant. And that hurdle is high and it's difficult even for organizations like ours to maintain and meet. So when we tried to engage and attract the rural community to the grant process, even back in the 90s and 2000 and SnowTrack, it is difficult. So there's a couple of options I see. One is changing the law, which I really don't prefer. I would like to treat all citizens equally, and even though I understand some of the rural community objects and the idea that we're going to enforce it or we're going to make them pay is kind of a fallacy because we don't even require them to register their motor vehicles. In my travels in the bush, I've seen many vehicles shipped directly from the lower 48 that still have lower 48 plates on them, 10 years old, never been registered in the state of Alaska. I don't think we'll ever enforce snowmobile registration in rural communities. Nevertheless, I believe they should participate, and by participation, then they have the opportunity to attract the monies to improve their systems as they so choose. One other option is to try and leverage organizations like the Iron Dog and the Iditarod. Trail marking was always a big thing for the rural community, and it was probably the most successful grant projects that I saw during my tenure on the board. So maybe the SnowTrack and the director and his staff can work with those organizations to sponsor grants and find willing workers to undertake the projects to make a more equitable distribution regionally around the state. The second part is I believe we need improvements in the DMB data. I understand it's currently extremely difficult, if not impossible, to determine how many machines are renewing their registrations versus how many are first sale or point of sale registrations. And just as a backup point, this program, the registration existed long before 98. I believe what happened in 98 was point of sale registration was added to Alaska statute, and that was the impetus to bring this thing and generate funds and to start the trudge on the vision that Kevin described. So improvements in DMB data so that we can track more accurately the statistically is the funding primarily coming from initial sales or are we seeing voluntary participation at a level that we would like, and then we could take action, you know, as encouraging or, you know, follow up with clubs and communities to try and improve it if it isn't. finally, I do have one significant concern with this bill as it stands today. The amendment calls for striking the word snowmobile out of D7 in the statute, leaving only off-highway vehicle for a registration of $10. Now, right now, the off-highway vehicle, ATVs, side-by-side, Jeeps that are not highway legal, are kind of like snow machines were back before the point of sale registration. There's no real enforcement of it, but I fear that there could be. In a time when we are faced with financial struggles, looking for sources of income, that we could see this as an opportunity. It would be an amount comparable to what you see for snow machines today, probably in the $200,000 to $300,000 a year range, and that is significant money for any state agency to help fund a position or a small portion of a program. My fear is that by striking the word snowmobile out of that one line, we highlight the emphasis that off-highway vehicles are required to be registered, and it's something we have not been enforcing. This is a long-term thing now. I'll jump to how to solve that. I believe, again, the principle pay to play, and I would like to see, and I know there's others in the state that have begun to get on board with it, a similar program to SnowTrack for summer motorized recreation. And it would be compulsory point of sale registration of off-highway vehicles. And we could begin to invest in that summer motorized infrastructure with the same level of intensity, if not more, than we do on winterized. That's all I got. Trails are kind of my thing. I've been involved with it for a long time. I enjoy it. I'm approaching retirement. I hope to do it more. Thank you for your time and your service and your attention.
Thank you very much, Scott. We have a question. Is it for Mr. Lapine? Representative Klayman.
I was just listening to your comment about the off-highway vehicle fee and these challenging budget times being at $10 and the only raise going to the snow machine fee. Are you suggesting that we should be actually raising the off-highway vehicle fee to $20 as well?
Representative Klayman, through the chair, no, sir. Not at this time. Not until we are willing to go the whole way and establish an off-highway vehicle grant program similar to SnowTrack. Now, whether the funds are administered by the board that exists today with the addition of a couple members, to answer your question, no.
And there's a follow-up. So it sounds like your concern is that by highlighting snow machines and the snow machines kind of carrying more of their own weight, it's going to raise a lot of questions about what's going on with other fees, but you don't want to raise them today.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Thank you. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but sometimes I try to.
And as follow-up question, and I don't know if Amy Erickson is still on the line, but for the off-road, and I know this is really about the snow machines, but I'm just curious, and it just raises the question, is the $10 fee being collected at the point of sale for off-road vehicles now? Because the previous testimony suggested that it maybe might not. I may have been confused. But is it being collected for the off-road vehicles at the $10 rate now? Amy, are you there? Oh, she is unavailable. I'm getting the gray code on the iPad that says unavailable. So perhaps that's a question that the sponsor could. Scott, if you're still online, if you want to respond and just clarify that what your knowledge of that is, you can go ahead.
Madam Chair, there is no compulsory point of sale for OHVs, that is ATVs and side-by-sides at this time.
Okay.
The registration is wholly voluntary. And, you know, just my gut feeling that we're probably at the 1-2% of ATV side-by-side owners voluntarily register their machines.
Okay, thank you very much for that clarification. I also, any other question for Mr. Lapine? Representative Foster.
thank you, Madam Kircher. Scott, you had mentioned, that eligibility was kind of a high hurdle, local governments, native corporations, and 501c3 nonprofits. I just want to make sure, I'll assume that tribes are also eligible. I know in my neck of the woods, I think they would probably be the one most likely to do any trail marking. Is that correct?
Representative Representative Foster, through the chair, I would have to defer to the agency to answer that specifically. I'm not qualified to differentiate between tribe and corporations.
Thank you.
Mr. Ellis, do you want to respond to that? It looks like you're still online. If we could bring Mr. Ellis back on to respond to that question, please.
Yes, ma'am. Ben Ellis, Director of Alaska State Parks. Through the chair to Representative Foster, absolutely. Tribes, nonprofits, cities, municipalities, boroughs, we're equal opportunity grant sharer.
Okay, thank you very much. And with that, we have we've resolved the technical difficulties, and James Squires is back online. James, you got cut off. I'm not sure if you know at what point that you got cut off, but at one point it was silent. So if you want to pick up and finish your testimony, we're all ears.
Thank you, Chair Hughes. I appreciate the latitude here. I really don't know at what point my testimony was cut off. Do you remember me mentioning that half of the state is unorganized? Do you
yes.
remember that part?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Because I really don't quite know where to pick up, but I think it's important for me to try to finish my testimony. For the rural part of Alaska, there is a very large amount of uncompliance due to ignorance and the word defiance would come to place. There's a nullification in trying to participate in a system like this when the money is not flowing back to the rural part of the state. I mean, it's already been admitted that most people on this board are from the urban areas. The money's being spent in the urban areas. You know, why would the people out here want to participate in such a thing when we live so remote anyway that we cut our own trails, we groom our own trails, and nobody even know around here has tags. We've got 5 troopers for 1,000 square mile. This may have been some of the points you heard earlier in my testimony. I'm really not sure. But I would like for you folks to take this opportunity to since it's been brought before you, to repeal this section of statute completely, to reduce the size of government, to get it smaller. And if this is an issue in organized areas, let them deal with it there. I've heard some of the comments by Representative Foster about how he hasn't received any of these notices. Well, yes, there may be some money for your district when this is all done, but you're also going to have to go back with the heavy weight of compliance, which I don't think your constituents are going to like. I get tired of hearing comparing Alaska to other states. You know, Alaska's special up here. To be compared to New York or Minnesota or the New England states, or where some previous testifier said we were going to steal from their models for a bigger government here, when this is the last frontier, when myself, my nearest neighbors are 6 miles in either direction, yet you want us to try to help financially support this system where the money's being used in the urbanized areas. You know, we've got a financial crisis going on in this state right now, and what we need to try to do is reduce and cut the size of government down and not be smelling out opportunities to increase the size of government and the burden on people. Right now, Alaska, rural Alaskans feel under attack with the governor's plan of slicing the permanent fund dividend, with the potential for an income tax, with the fuel tax, all these taxes and revenues that are taking place at a time when we need to try to get the size and scope of government down to size. So anyway, I'm opposed to House Bill 319. And I'd like for you to take the opportunity to repeal the entire section and get this back to the last frontier. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Squires. And as Chair, I'm going to take the latitude to ask you a question just because this is a user fee kind of bill, and I have heard that the cost of search and rescue, I don't know what that number is going to be, but I know that it's been a concern and how that's funded. If you were out in your area and you went a little further than you normally would and a storm came up and you were lost and the state spend dollars to help go find you, how do you think the state should cover that?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because not only do I live remote, but over the course of 11 and a half years, I've sailed a 37-foot sailboat completely around the world and have been in some of the most remote spots of the globe. And there's a responsibility that sits on your shoulders when you go into these remote areas to be fully prepared for what's taking place. And last fall, as a matter of fact, I was 7 miles back in, and on a Rokon, which is a two-wheel drive motorcycle, and the thing landed on my ankle and severely sprained my ankle. And I was had a difficult situation getting out. Now, what I had done, my wife, I already had a float plan with my wife, and my neighbor knew where I was and would have come in and got me out. So we have an individual responsibility to behave like our forefathers here have behaved in this great state, to be prepared. If you're out in bear country, you carry a sidearm. You carry a means to start a fire. You do what you need to do. You know, and over my years on the high seas and up here, many of the incidents that have taken place where someone has asked for a rescue, you know, didn't need to happen in the first place. So it is important to educate. But the question is the government supposed to educate it? Are we supposed to get it from our parents and our peers and the people around us? And I would suggest the latter. We want a smaller size government that's restricted back to its constitutional mandates. That's what keeps us the last frontier. We don't want to be compared to New York or Minnesota or the New England states. And so maybe that helps to answer the question.
Thank you, Mr. Squires. I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit here, just because I want to. Suppose you had all those things in place, and suppose all those things failed, and then we still were having to send you state resources to go out and find you. Then what?
Well, first of all, you have to know to come out and rescue. And I'll go back to my maritime example in the past, being out in the middle of the ocean. If something happened to us out there, there are consequences with making decisions to lead an alternative lifestyle. You know, it may come to a grim end. There's no question about that. But there are many of us up here in the last frontier who would rather live life, even though it might be shorter, than to depend upon government in some manner to come in and save you. You know, when we got five troopers for thousands of square miles, they come in after the fact. It's the individual's responsibility to know what we're doing. And we've got friends around here in our Bible studies, old trappers that have been around here forever. One guy runs 125 miles of trap line by himself all these years. That's what we aspire to be like. People like that. Who take the wilderness seriously and do what they need to do. Now, we're talking about money that's been spent on grooming that's taken place. Grooming. And that's really absurd that this grooming is done for these more urban areas of the state. So right now, there is a natural balance that's taken place through the people in the urbanized area that are paying to get their grooming done, which is attributed to a larger size of government, and the people in the rural areas who are basically nullifying this. Foster's never received anything in the mail about registration and didn't know anybody that did. So there's a natural balance that's taking place, but the effect of this natural balance is taking good, honest Alaskan citizens and turn them into some type of an outlaw or a bandit for not complying with the constraints of a larger government. So there's a reason that's a platform plank in one of the predominant parties for limited government is because we can appreciate the self-reliance and the responsibility that goes on people as individuals to behave as Alaskans, not like people from New York or Minnesota.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Squire. So the grim end that you might come to, you're okay with the government not coming out and rescuing you. So you really did stick to your case, I'll have to say that. With that, thank you. And I'm going to leave public testimony open. We're going to be holding this bill over. Thursday, we're not planning on having a meeting because it looks like we may be on the floor of the House with the budget. Next week, we are working on things, don't have things totally confirmed, but we do have a Juris Doctorate candidate who's working on for the Duke Law School Law Journal some research on drone policy. And we also, as we mentioned earlier, maybe by email, I don't remember if we mentioned committee, we had a technical issue that we need to bring HCR 17 back, and so we will need members' presence. And so if that works out, we'll do that Tuesday. And then the following Thursday, next week Thursday, Google will be here to do a presentation on driverless cars, which should be quite interesting. So I just want to give you a heads up at what we're looking at next week.
Madam Chair, will we get to have a demo in the driverless cars?
I don't know.
I don't know. We'd have, probably have to get approval here in the City and Borough of Yuma if we were going to do something like that. So if there's no further discussion, we will adjourn our meeting at 2:26. Thank you.